Okay, another place where this generative AI is happening is in things like drug discovery and materials design. So in this example, instead of giving it text and saying, you know, like describing an image that you want, like, you know, make me an image of a teddy bear on a skateboard in Times Square or something, the prompt isn't text. The prompt is this molecule, which is insulin. And you're saying, try to generate me some new thing, some new protein or something that will bind to insulin. And they're like the AI model, by looking at a bunch of other examples, is like now dreaming up a new molecule that it thinks might actually fold up in the way that's shown and bind to the insulin. And so this was work that was done by David Baker's lab, covered in the New York Times, and he won the Nobel Prize for that last year. So that stuff is working, which is pretty impressive. Now, the thing about it that I wanna really stress, there are a few things that are really important, especially since they just won the Nobel Prize, is that that one is like, how do you trust this, right? We talked about trust, right? In this situation, the AI model kind of could be wrong. The thing is, you're going to follow up afterwards with, you know, this is like a proposal. Like, I think that this is a new like a new protein that will actually fold up as shown and bind to insulin. But you know, it could be wrong, right? So you need to actually synthesize that protein and stick it in a lab and do follow-up experiments to confirm that it actually has the properties that you want. Okay, and so you would never like roll it out in people or something like that until you've done all this other, you know, kind of testing. But the first question is, how do you find this thing in the first place, right? The design space of possible molecules is huge. And so just having a suggestion, here's a candidate, maybe it works. If you can do that more efficiently and it accelerates the process of drug discovery, then you still win. Okay, so that's kind of the idea. It's okay if the predictions are wrong, as long as it accelerates this discovery process, and then you confirm that it actually has those properties in the kind of old-fashioned way. The same sort of story is happening with materials science, that people are trying to come up with new materials that might be good for batteries or good for carbon capture or any of a number of, you know, have some kind of desired material property. That's a very hard problem, and generative AI is accelerating that discovery process as well. Okay, so I call this pattern exploration with confirmation. The other thing that I really want to try to reinforce is that the AI is not doing this on its own. It's not in isolation. The only way that the AI works, in addition to the confirmation, is that the AI was trained on real data. And that data was either came from a simulation that like the traditional chemists made, or it came from some experiments that traditional chemists did. If you took them out of the loop, none of this stuff would work, okay? So you can't just replace scientists with AI at this stage. But these are the Nobel Prize winners in chemistry. David Baker is trained as a chemist, and Demis Hassabis and John Jumper are actually coming more from the AI machine learning side. They're just from Google DeepMind, and they kind of solved the protein folding problem. So they came at it from the kind of computer science side. But nevertheless, there's been tremendous progress recently, and it's a very, you know, exciting moment. Okay, so I already made the point that AI didn't do it alone. So some of the things that are out there is, there's, for instance, something called the Protein Data Bank, which scientists all around the world have contributed to for decades. The AI is trained on the data in that database. You take that database away, none of this would have happened. So, and similarly, if you're looking for like new materials for batteries or carbon capture, there's something called the Materials Project, which materials scientists too have been contributing to for decades. So I just want to reinforce, it's not AI that's getting all, I mean, it's getting all the attention, but it's the two together that are really making it work. Now, in contrast, one of the other patterns, and then we'll start to wrap it up here, is the way that AI is being used in areas like experimental physics or cosmology or astrophysics. And in these situations, you have some kind of complicated experiment. This is like the particle collider, or you could imagine it's a telescope or what have you. It's collecting some data. And the machine learning and AI algorithms are part of the data analysis pipeline. So they're collecting the data, they're analyzing the data. It's sort of like the souped up version of like, is this a car or a horse or something? You're looking at the data, you're trying to identify what's going on in the data and to help automate and improve the data analysis pipeline that then leads to claims of scientific discovery. There's no additional like follow-up. I mean, this is like part of the actual process of claiming the discovery. So in this situation, mistakes really matter. And so you got to be much more careful, and you really need to be able to calibrate these systems or understand how to quantify the uncertainty of using them. And I won't go into any details, but there's a lot of progress that's been made there. And so if you want to trust AI more, having a bunch of scientists that are skeptical about the use of it and figuring out how do you convince me that it's not doing something wrong is like a good place to start. So scientists are really contributing into the trustworthy AI space.